Well, Shilty, it's two ordinary coppers.
Yep, very ordinary.
I think we had a bit of a chat about what we should talk about next, and we're just moving through our careers. And to me, once you've done... So we started off talking about, you know, that really junior role when everything's new and scary and shiny. Then you roll into, you know, you're good at your job. You go to that first critical incident and you're like, shit, what are we doing here? Like, this is pretty wild. And then you get that good leadership and you sort of, you get really comfortable in your role.
Yeah.
And I think we left it there and we've talked about the PTSD side of things, and that was more down the track and looking back. And then we spoke about funny stuff, and a lot of that was early on, so there's still other funny things that happen.
Yeah.
Just later in your career, it just all becomes a bit normal, so funny stuff happens every day. But so I think you came up with a good idea that we talk about that first, when you first get to the point where you're now considered quite an experienced general duties copper, and you've done a bit of relief out bush, you've done some... We're in Katherine still, so we're talking 2-3 years in the job now, so like 2009, 2010.
Yeah.
And... we moved into a couple of specialist roles. I moved into a more senior, like a more, not senior, but more formalised CIB role. But you buggers moved into a really interesting little thing. So what happened in Darwin in those years, in that late 2000s, was that property volume crime was a problem. And it's been a problem for years, long before us.
Yeah.
There was all kinds of task forces, strike forces, operations that would target that volume property crime that's slightly more complex than general duties. Not because the jobs are tricky, it's because they're committed, there's lots of the jobs, so there's lots of break-ins, lots of stolen cars. They're committed generally by the same people, or a cohort. There's a known cohort that commit those offences.
Yeah.
And as a result, you sort of need a specialist crew who... They don't have to really go beyond the abilities of a general duties police officer, but what happens is they're given the time to concentrate on that volume property crime, which is also topical for politicians, and it's something, and it's also fast-paced and it's kind of sexy.
Yeah.
It's a cool job for a junior, well, not, you know, like a junior copper in the sense of you haven't been in for 20 years, but a good 2 or 3 year constable on the road who's showing a bit of nous, and you might get pulled across. You're going to wear T-shirts, jeans, you're going to drive unmarked cars. It's 21 Jump Street.
Mate, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah. So, do you want to talk about when you moved from GDs into Katherine, you guys who went into that tactical team?
So, basically what happened, I was actually relieving out at Kalkaringa, and I was just about to move back in. I've been out there for a couple of months, just helping out there. And obviously there was a rise, as what you spoke about in Darwin, where property crime goes up. And I think there was something like 23, 24 unlawful entries that had happened.
But in
like
Katherine. You said,
yes, in Katherine. Yep. But like you said, it was a crew that were doing it. And so what they did is they generated a commander's tack team. Katherine was a little bit old school, I would say, at the time. So what they did is it went down to the ORC of the station, or officer in charge, and then he put it to his admin, Connie, because who did the rosters, to sit there and go, all I want is 4 motivated blokes that actually have space in the roster. Can you put them in here and just tackle this? So I was very lucky. You know, we really didn't know what we were doing. To the extent, like, we'd done serious, well, not serious investigation. We'd done high level or higher level for GDs, but nothing overly serious. And so we jumped in there with, so there's 4 of us. And funnily enough, 2 from our squad, 2 from the squad just after. So there was only 3 months between us in the, you know, from when we came out of the squad. And we just started doing like what we normally did in Katherine. You go out, you get enough evidence, you arrest someone. Mm. You bring them in for questioning. We had really didn't realise that our approach would be as successful as what it was. Mm. And, you know, it was more luck than anything, really. And so we went out. Got some information about these unlawful entries, dragged someone in, had a chat to them. Oh, hold on. We found a couple of other offenders or people we need to speak to. So it just grew from there. The difference, I suppose, from now to different times in policing, and, you know, there's nothing really specific about the time that this happened. We managed to get that first person remanded. So then that took... It stopped the unlawful entries.
Breaks that chain, yeah?
Yeah. And then, of course, we actually dragged somebody else in straight away, had a chat to them, and remanded them in custody.
And the net expands.
Exactly. So, and then, yeah, you get a bit more information, you go and grab someone else. To the point that we, the four of us, were dealing and doing three interviews a day. But it had a snowball effect. So we basically tackled it like they were tackling the unlawful entries. No idea that we would be successful in that. It was just what we did. But you could see the advantage of how we actually went about it. And we learned from that. But I think the thing is, like you said, 21 Jump Street. It really was 21 Jump Street. I was running around, I had jeans, a shirt, my RM Williams.
Yep.
And we were chasing people down the streets. I remember one case, there was a youth that was out at Binjari, and he was hiding away, impossible to get. And he had been involved in a couple of things, but it was more GDs had trouble getting him, because every time they drove into that community, there was somebody at the front house that used to call him up straight away. Basically, the police company.
He had a cockatoo.
And he would run out the back into the bush, so they could never catch this guy. All right, so we got up there, my partner and I, and we sat there one night, and it was pouring rain. I remember this. And we sat there, and so we drove out there. And unmarked cars. Mm. So we drove out there, a bit off before you get to the entrance, about a kilometre back. We walked in, went through the fence, and crawled up behind this house where we knew this guy was actually hiding away. And so my partner and I were actually lying down in the grass. It's pouring down rain. You're basically, a car goes past, you jump down and hide because you don't want anybody. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so we're sitting there hiding away. And then what we do, get on a mobile, we call GD's unit. Can you come into the front? Anyway, hilarious. So this guy, we can see him coming up the road because we're only a couple hundred metres into the bush. Yeah, they're not massive communities. Mm. And as they're driven in, of course, you know the phone call's going to happen. Anyway, so we're sitting there and you see this head pop out from the house. And it's looking down at the front where you actually enter the community. Then you see, and you can see him realise it's cops, and he bolts out the back door, straight into us.
Yes.
So we sit there, and as soon as he gets within 5 metres, we jump on and go, "Hello, mate.
Hello, my boy."
And we arrest him, take him in. It was a successful operation. Yeah. But like I said, you know, we were doing this. We had access to detectives and, you know, senior police and all that sort of thing, but we were left to our own devices. Yep. It really was 21 Jump Street.
Yeah. So I can carry on a little bit there. I can move down towards the end of my, before COVID, before the end of my career, I was in a team called Strike Force Trident. So Strike Force Trident was exactly that in Darwin, but a formalised unit.
Yeah.
So what happened was, through the history of the NT Police in modern history, through the 80s and 90s and 2000s, this was a cycle. So like you said, you're successful. But of course you're successful because you're given the time and the resources. Well, resources of cars.
Yeah.
You're given the time and the ability to just go out and target these individuals, these very specific jobs that you're targeting. The property crime, stolen cars, you know your cohort. All of a sudden, they'll get remanded in custody and the jobs stop happening.
Yep.
So you can't have you guys sitting around on a treadmill.
No.
So you're back into uniform, and what happens is these guys naturally just rotate through the jail and they come back. Property crime goes up again. Mm. So what was happening was, throughout history, there was a cycle of property crime would explode somewhere, a team was put together to deal with it, it was dealt with, it was brought back to a manageable level, and that team was dissolved back into general duties.
Yeah.
So I think it was in where Commander's TAC team in Darwin in the late 2000s, they were sort of more formalised, and it became a gazetted position within the police.
Yeah.
And it was still called Commander's TAC team. I don't know exactly when it was, but it was pretty early days. They called it Strike Force Trident in Darwin. And they had a similar, it was the property crime team or something similar based in Alice Springs. That was a formal team. They were a team of detectives. I think it was the Southern Property Crime Team or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Same thing, different location. But Catherine never really had one. Tennant Creek didn't have one.
No.
See, Alice and Darwin were able to perpetuate that because it never completely went away. So it was successful to have a team there that sort of knew the people, and that, yeah, it was a cool place to work. It was T-shirts, cargo pants. If anyone's watched The Force or Territory Cops, they follow Trident all the time.
Yep.
There's a ping pong table in the office. There's flags hanging off the wall. There's funny pictures of people who've done stupid stuff. that's how it is. But if you're going to be in there, you have to be a worker.
Oh, definitely.
So there's a lot of work that's done in there, and it never ended. So I was a bit jealous early on because I thought you guys were having a great time, and I was sort of, I hate to say babysitting probies, but it does get, it's not, it's an honourable thing to do, to be a senior partner and sort of mentoring junior guys, but you sort of, you're held back. You can't go hard. You need to really help those people through, and that's not taking away from them. That's because they're just learning their trade. So I was at that point where I'd come back from bush, and I sort of had promised my wife I wouldn't go bush too much more because I was doing a lot of time out there. And I was kind of just like a senior guy and let's put it in perspective, senior on the road in Katherine, sorry, at that point, was if you were 2 years in the job, then you were very experienced.
Yeah.
So, and we were, 2-3 years in. So it was 2 years actually, because the end of 2009, I went and said to the OIC at the time, I said, can I get a gig with Themis, which was the operation name given by the AFP for the intervention.
Yep.
So there were bush stations out of the place. You could do a 6 month secondment as an intervention station OIC, and you'd be in charge of two AFP seconded interstate cops. They were from all the different states, seconded to the deployment group or the overseas deployment group, and within the AFP, who were deliberately just deployed to the NT for a 6 month period. So I wanted either that, and I said, can I have that, or KIU, which was Katherine Investigation Unit? And he said, yep, no worries, mate, leave it with me. The next day, he called me back in. He said, I can 100% give you... Oh, sorry, no, he started off with Themis. He went, I can 50% give you a Themis job. And I thought, well, that's pretty cool, yeah. He said, but I can 100% give you KIU. So I said, do you want to go out and run a station already, or do you want to go and do some detective work? I'd never really thought about it. Like, I hadn't gone, I want to be a detective. I was happy being a copper.
Yeah.
I was learning my trade, you know, but realistically, we're still junior.
Mm.
Yeah, sure, we've been to 1,000 jobs, or thousands and thousands of jobs, but you haven't really gone beyond the methodology of speaking to witnesses, collecting statements, you know, locking down crime scenes, dealing with crime scene examiners. You're sort of still... Well, I had no idea of the complexities of more complex, more advanced policing. And anyway, so as a result, two of us got put across into Katherine Investigation Unit, which was about a four or five, maybe six person team, headed up by a detective sergeant.
Yep.
That was attached and worked for the OIC of the station at that point. My sergeant was a fellow called Tony Henrys. And I'll just give you a bit of his background. The reason I'm naming him is because he died in 2018, which was just out of the blue. There was nothing immediately wrong with him. But back in 2009, when I went in there, he was a very well-known detective sergeant. He'd just come out of major crime in Darwin, and he'd been in there for a very, very long time. He'd gone into major crime in the late 90s, early 2000s, and very quickly been very heavily involved in the Falconio murder. So he was one of the few that was still getting around at an operational level who'd worked on the Falconio job. The other one being Izzy, and Izzy's a legend as well. She's still there, and she's still a detective sergeant in Darwin. So they were operational coppers. A lot of the other guys who'd been involved at that level were now commissioned officers. They were higher up, or they'd left the job or whatever else.
Yeah.
He was one of the few that was still operational on the ground. He had a hell of a lot of knowledge for crime. He just had a knack for dealing with bad crooks. He was a very relaxed bloke, loved a beer way too much, smoked like a chimney.
Yep.
But crooks loved him. Not loved him, that's the wrong way. Crooks respected him, and crooks would talk to him.
He
had a way of relating to the people, and he often said that. He says, you need to be able to talk to these people. We need to go out and get right into it. So, I mean, I'll talk more about that side of it as we go along, but... myself and another fella of a similar vintage were put straight into KIU at that point. And when we first got there, there wasn't much happening. Like, there were jobs rolling in, but there wasn't any huge jobs on. The guys who were in there were already busy. As a detective, you stay busy regardless. An arrest is just a point in an investigation. So there'll be an investigation into whatever matter you're dealing with. There may have been an arrest early or later in that investigation. And a lot of people think, oh, well, he's been arrested, that's the end of that. And that's not true. As a detective especially, you'll be pushing things through the court, and your prosecutor, and your... Well, this is where I sort of learned to interact more with prosecutors at a higher strategic sort of level. The prosecution will be talking to the defence lawyers of that person.
Yeah.
And they will be coming back with, oh, we need more information on this. They're raising a defence in this. Have you got any evidence that can counter that? So you're continually investigating matters, even when you have a person in custody for that. So this was all a learning curve. When I first got across there, I had none of those jobs. I had lots and lots of jobs. I had lots of domestics, lots of aggravated assaults, things that still needed following up, still needed to get witnesses to court for them. And the beauty of it was I wasn't going to general duties jobs, just building more and more jobs. So I had the time to dissolve all those jobs and get them sorted. And I suppose we were thinking, oh, this is easy. It's not easy, it's just different. This is kind of a slower pace to general duties. And anyway, so I was getting quite comfortable. And so that was late October 2009. In early December or late November 2009, my wife was a school teacher in Katherine. And there's an annual event every year. It's like the big Katherine Christmas party for every teacher from every school called the Chalkies Ball. And it's a big event. Like there's hundreds of people there and it's a formal, it's all dressed up to the nines and everyone gets on the booze and I think they have karaoke and have a great old time. And anyway, I was in my penguin suit and we're going to walk up the stairs and my wife's all dressed up in a formal dress and, you know, we've been in Katherine for a while and we haven't had an opportunity to go to a nice place and dress up nicely. So it's a big deal.
Mm.
It's a Saturday night. I'm not rostered on. I'm back at work Monday morning. Happy days. Literally scripted stupidly. It would almost be tacky in a TV show. We're walking up the front steps and my phone rings. Anyway, I answer it. It's Tony. And he's like, hey, mate, how are you? I said, oh, yeah, we're just going to the ball. Oh, yeah, no worries, mate. We've got a stabbing. I'll see you in 10 minutes. And I said, oh, I get that. We're going to the Chalkies Ball. And he's like, yeah, mate, I understand that, but I'll see you in 10 minutes. And it was at that moment, I think, that Ema and I, my wife and I, it was rammed home to us that welcome to a whole new ball game. There's, in general duty, someone can ask you, would you like to work overtime?
Exactly, and you knock it back.
You can knock it back, or you might say yes or whatever, but if I was walking up the steps to the Chalkies Ball, I'd say no.
Yeah.
But not when you're one of a very few number, and I wasn't a detective at the time. I was a plainclothes constable, but I was still an investigator. So, sorry, mate, job's on.
I'll just touch on it there because you don't have a choice. It's like you said, there's a limited number of people. You're on call pretty much 24 hours a day.
Well, it's not that you're on call. It's that there's an expectation that you will go.
Exactly.
And especially as a very junior person on secondment. So I was not gazetted.
No, that's exactly right. And the thing is, though, you want to make a name for yourself.
Yeah.
Because you need to be known as reliable. Yep. And yes, I will come to this. And you get a lot of experience out of that. But it's something that people don't really understand. The move from GDs into detectives.
Mm.
Because it's two totally different roles.
Yeah. So there's a... And it needs to be done well by the detectives back towards the uniformed guys. I know for a fact this is a nationwide rift that people go to detectives and they're seen as the shiny bums and they drink coffee and they do this and they do that. And look, I played along with the jokes as well and I saw some people who went into crime who we knew they weren't necessarily the best constables on the road, but they might have had a knack for investigation. They might not be good in a rough and tumble, but they're really good in an interview or something like that. So there's always that rift. It's quite often driven by old salty sergeants who the bloody detectives think they're going to take over this and bloody crime think they're everything. And it's also driven by old detective sergeants.
Yep.
What was the old saying? I apologise to anyone listening, but the old cheese dick thing. Oh, the cheese dicks have got this and that.
Yeah.
And that's not good. No. You can't have that rift. You're all on the same team. The crooks are out there. So the crooks are there, the police are there, every single one of the police, and their community's there. And our job is to keep the crooks away from the community.
Yep.
All of us. That's all of our job.
Yeah.
So to have a rift, I was never a supporter of the rift. I like to think that we work together. But anyway...
Can I just touch on something there? This is something that I know you definitely brought to it, because we had a couple of times, like I jumped in and out of detectives, saw plainclothes Connie back at the time, working in those roles. And I had a very good working relationship with general duties, which was really good because they used to actually come to me with information sometimes. But they weren't confident in actually going to the detectives because and not so much that some of these detectives had that rift. It was just that rift was there to a certain extent. One of the things that I think you, because when I was working general duties a lot of the time, because of course after the TAC team it got dissolved, and then I moved back in. But one thing you would always do, and not all detectives did this, when you came in, because you come in and talk to the shift sergeant, you walk through the muster room and you would chat to people. Oh, how you going? Oh, hey, g'day, mate. Yeah, you know, banter. Blah, blah. Exactly. But it created, like, you get some people, some detectives would walk through and not even acknowledge anyone. But you created that, I suppose, communication. Where they were happy to sit there and go, oh, he's, yeah, yes, he might be acting in this role, but he's still me. Oh, he's still in our area.
He's still just a baggy-ass constable.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. And I think I never wanted to go into that role and think I was any better than anyone else. No. I was happy to be over there because I was interested in that sort of work. But I think more to the point, so that rift aside, the biggest thing I noticed straight away is we didn't actually have a clue what they did. And when we started getting the bigger jobs, it was like, oh my God, this is complex. Like, there's a lot more to this. So the example, fairly early on, so maybe 6 months in, we'd dealt with some big jobs. We'd had rapes, we'd had bad stabbings, we'd had horrendous domestic violence stuff. Actually, one was national news we attended where a woman had boiling water poured all over her. Yeah. And she was actually left for a couple of days, and how she didn't die was a miracle. So basically, that was like a homicide investigation. Just the victim was alive. But anyway, in mid-2010, there was a homicide in town. And there were just no experienced detectives in town. There was the detective sergeant who was dealing with it at the time had taken over from Tony. Tony was off
at Croker Island.
Croker Island. So he'd gone off on a THEMIS stint, which was to run a an intervention station. And the detective sergeant running it was a good fellow with lots of time, but he sort of wasn't as experienced as Tony was, and probably didn't have that really locked down knowledge. I'm not going to run the guy down. He's a good.
No, he's a great guy.
But he probably just didn't have the experience that Tony did in that particular job.
Can I just butt in there? Tony. They sent Tony out there because he's fixated in his job.
He was cooked,
exactly. And so what they did is send him out there for a bit of a reprieve. Get away from a bit, to come back, relax, and then continue in his role.
Yeah.
But one thing Tony had about him, he just had this. I don't know. Yeah, some people have a presence.
Yeah.
He rocked up, people listened.
He did.
And I think that's...
But he had the runs on the different board to do that.
Yeah, he did.
So, yeah, we rolled into this job and we were so junior. All of a sudden, we've got a big crime scene with blood everywhere. We didn't know it was a murder. There was blood everywhere. We didn't exactly know, because a few things can cause you to hemorrhage out like that. I didn't realise this. A bloody snake bite can do it.
Yeah.
So anyway, we didn't know. There was nothing obvious. There was no sign of a struggle. It was not an obvious crime scene. It was the most blood I'd seen at that point. And I'd seen other jobs as a general duties copper.
Yeah.
But there was so much blood in this house.
And just correct me if I'm wrong. It was almost 24 hours. It was the next day we found him.
Yeah. So we estimated he'd been dead for about... He was in an air-conditioned unit, which is what sort of preserved the scene a little bit. But we believe we found him about 12, maybe 15 hours after he'd been killed. And at that stage, obviously, the crime scene's there. Everything's treated as a crime scene at this stage. But you got to remember, we're in Katherine. Autopsies take place in Darwin. Body's got to be retrieved from the crime scene. Crime scene's got to be completely examined. We don't know if it's a murder yet. So what happened is, it was a good call, actually. The crime scene was held. Body goes for autopsy. So the body goes to Darwin for autopsy. And we recovered the body out. We slipped and slid through his blood to get his body out. We get him up to Darwin to put him through an autopsy. And we're all sort of at a point, at a standstill in that investigation, because we've got nothing to go on. We don't even know who he is.
Yep.
So we had an inkling who he is, but we want formal identification. So anyway, we're waiting around, and then a phone call comes from the coroner's constable in Darwin, saying that we do have a single stab wound to the neck. It's approximately 75 millimeters deep, and it's completely severed the carotid artery.
Yep.
Well, job's on.
Yeah.
Righto, we've got a murder. We've got no weapon. We got nothing. We don't know who he is. Fingerprints came back. We work out who he is. Anyway, it came back, and without going into that particular investigation, Because there was a bit to that. That, you know, there was complexities to that that were distressing to, for family. And
definitely.
We're not here to talk about that particular murder. No. We're talking about our role as detectives.
Yeah.
So very quickly after that, we get into a very fast pace, very long-winded. There's no knocking off. There is no end time. We investigate until we stop. So we're going through the motions that we had people coming and going from that. We big door knocks. We start getting a few leads and we're right into this. And I think my point is that we were looking at each other going, my God, this is so complex. There's so much to this.
Yep.
So we weren't used to that level of, like, it's not... It is not CSI.
No.
We're not solving this matter in 1 hour with bloody ad breaks and some chick with bad makeup on a computer that knows everything.
Yeah.
We're dealing with it. We're finding this out as we go. We're dealing with witnesses who don't want to talk to police.
Yep.
We're dealing with crime scenes that are complex. We've got crime scene examiners now that it's escalated who've come from Darwin because the blood spatter analysis and all this sort of specialised roles within forensics.
Yep.
And I'm just going to talk about forensics for 2 seconds. I have utmost admiration for forensics, but I could never do that job.
No.
I don't have the attention span to do that shit.
But
there's so much that they do that is just ultra analytical, and I'm not like, that is not my personality. No. I can't do it. But they spent, I think that scene was, and this is not a long scene by any means, but I think it was 3 days of really intense blood spatter analysis, photography, DNA sampling, fingerprinting. And then the prioritisation of those results through the actual lab in Darwin.
Exactly.
This is the stuff that the civilians don't see. No. It's not sexy. And
look, I'll just stop you there, Damon. How many exhibits do you reckon there was? I don't know, there was hundreds. It was
So there were hundreds that we'd seized.
That's right.
And what we seized was nothing. No. What forensics seized. So you've gone from turning up to a bashing... And you arrest old mate and you seize his bloody shirt.
Yeah,
you
take his
fingerprints, you take photographs. So photographs are a big forensic tool. Mm. Photos taken at the scene. The other thing people don't realise is you have to get levels of authority for all these samples and things like that. So even to take a person's photograph for evidential purposes is what's called a non-intimate sample.
Yes.
So you have to get approval from a senior sergeant for that, for a person on a charge or believed to be punished by, I think it was 6 months imprisonment.
Yep.
So there is... Or in prison. I can't remember the details. Details aren't relevant.
Right, yeah.
But it's... You have to get approval for all these things. So there's a bureaucratic process to all this stuff. So none of it takes no time. One thing that I will say in that... of course, I'd sort of been trained a little... No, I hadn't been formally trained that well about taking out warrants. I knew how to do it.
Yeah.
I'd done an operational investigator's course, so I did know how to apply for a search warrant.
Yeah.
I knew that we could apply through over the phone, things like that, in emergencies. But I'd never done a phone warrant. I'd done a few search warrants, but I'd never done a phone... I'd done quite a few search warrants, but I'd never done a phone warrant. And I remember one of the people, one of the people in charge said to me, right, mate, we need to get a warrant. You need to get a phone warrant right now. And I said, I've never done a phone warrant. Well, now's a good time to learn.
Yep.
And I remember thinking, no, now's a terrible time to learn. This is a homicide investigation.
Yeah.
We can't learn and make a mistake here. This should be getting investigated by very senior detectives.
Yep.
I'm a third year, not even... 2.5 years on the road, constable. I'm off probation, but I'm a constable. I'm a plainclothes constable, nothing more. Don't think for a second I am anything flash.
No.
So I say, I don't know how to do that. So I didn't do that. I very, very quickly went and got a normal search warrant, went to my normal JP, applied for a search warrant in that matter, came back with the warrant approved, and we rolled in, did a search warrant.
Mate, I'm just going to stop you there. Like, you've just reminded me of something, because I was involved in that one as well. I was called in, I was working in the Family and Domestic Violence Unit at the time. And so they called us in, I think, you'd already found the body.
Oh, it was all hands on deck.
Yeah. And so they called us all in, so we came up to the station. One of my first jobs, I think it was on the second day after we discovered there was a murder, they arrested this guy. They found a witness.
Yeah.
And they asked me to come in. Now, how long in the college was our confit presentation to do a confit?
An hour?
If that.
Yeah.
So
it was all it was. It wasn't teaching us how to do it. It just said that the police can do this.
Yeah, exactly. But then I get thrown in. And I'm exactly the same as you. We've got no experience. I've never even thought about doing a confit.
No.
And they asked me, can you do a confit with this person?
Hell no. Like,
I was exactly the same. No. I'm like, what, me?
Yeah.
Like, I've got no idea what I'm doing.
No.
And they throw them in there. Look, it's step by step. I spoke to the auxiliary who did the actually he did the what do you call it, the drawing or whatever afterwards, the computer stuff afterwards, and they gave me the book and they said just follow it through this procedure. Okay.
Yeah.
Like this is like you're so outside.
It's learning. It's flying by the seat of your pants, by in a bloody F-18.
Yes.
It's just that the cognitive load is extreme, and the trouble is there's a high cognitive load, but not just that, there's an extreme fatigue load.
Yeah,
we were working, and they do it differently now, and I'm glad they do, because it seemed to me like in those early days investigations with, or murder investigations in particular, were a competition to see who could stay awake the longest.
Yeah,
they were just exhausting. That they absolutely drained it from you to the point you drive around with sand in your eyes. It was so tiring. So look, we're getting along in this. We don't want to go too long, but I think the point of this is the transition from that general duties. And don't get me wrong, we were competent. Sure, we weren't the most experienced guys, but if you needed a job taken care of, we could do it. We could do anything within the GD's role. We knew who to call to get advice. All of a sudden, it's like graduating from primary school, going straight into grade 10.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like this whole world that. Sure, you know that world exists.
Yeah.
But you're not familiar with it.
No, that's right.
Like, another great example was, it's like, if say you're really good at driving an automatic car. So no trouble. Well, here's an 18-speed Road Ranger.
Yeah, yeah.
Go for that. And it's like, well, I know how to steer a vehicle down the road, but I have no idea how this bloody transmission works.
Exactly.
So it was just this learning curve that was incredible, that the comfort zone factor was zero. That it was everything we were doing was stress.
Well, the only comfort we had was, luckily, we had some really good, I suppose, experienced people that we could, but they were approachable.
Yeah, they were.
And, you know, and we were lucky to have those.
A little bit, but they were very high ranking.
Oh, they were, yeah.
They weren't your immediate supervisors.
No.
They were superintendent and commander.
Commander, yeah.
And they were very experienced detectives.
Yep.
And they had some really good ideas. But what happened out of all that? Sorry, long story short, out of that, there was criticism about that investigation.
Yep.
There were things that didn't get to frame. That job was not done as well as it should have been. So don't get me wrong, we got offenders and all the rest of it, but I think out of that, no one actually was ever convicted for that. There was coronial matters that went through and identified the people who more than likely committed those offences.
Yep.
But to this day, I know that the one particular person who was a youth at the time, so I'm not going to identify him, that person is still on the streets. And we know that he killed this guy.
Yeah.
But we couldn't prove it in court. And that was born out of that lack of experience. And that was a lesson in itself.
Yeah, there was a couple of other factors.
There was a lot of factors.
It wasn't just our investigation.
It was extremely complex.
But it was one of the ones, and I think our commander at the time, and great.
She did well.
Yeah, she did very well. And she actually said, one of the differences she noticed with it, because she'd been, of course, part of very...
well, she was Falconio as well.
Exactly.
She, yeah, yeah.
And she said that what she didn't consider, I think, when they actually went into this, the fact that we were also, at that time, 21 Jump Street.
Yeah.
We'd get a lead and we'd run.
Yeah.
But no, you slow don't down. Do that. You slow down. You have a task to do.
Yep.
So, Damien, you do this... Yeah. Then come back to me.
Yes.
And that's the same with everybody working under that. And that's something we didn't understand.
Yeah.
We did it, but we kind of jumped hoops, so to speak, to try and keep that going. But what you have to understand, you're a part of the cog.
Mm.
You're a cog in a big machine,
yeah.
And you sit there, all you do is this.
Yeah.
And then you pass it up. And it's like a pyramid shape. So you have the person at the top that has all the information.
Yeah.
And then you have all the, I suppose, gremlins or
I love to call it an octopus.
Yeah.
So you've got an octopus. The head of the octopus is your detective sergeant. They're your senior investigator in charge, I believe it's called. And your office manager. Your promise was the computer system up there. So those are office managers. They're the ones reading through the information that's coming in.
Yep.
And deciding the next direction. What they do is they tell an octopus limb to
yep.
go out, get this statement, bring it back and stick it in the head.
Yep.
The head will look at it, the head will go through and go, can we get more information on this? Because they've got all information.
Yep.
And a good detective sergeant will be, that's great, mate, you've got this information here. We've got another statement that says this person also saw this, this and this. Can you go back and clarify with that witness before you let them go
yep.
about this, this and this? So it, all
it,
of a sudden,
it was a really good system. Like, I love it. It's just so
methodical.
Yeah, it is. Mm. Yeah.
So I think we'll wrap it up shortly, but I think the learning curve was, welcome to A-grade, fellas.
Yep.
You've been playing around in Colts. Welcome to A-grade.
That's right.
And we were not ready for A-grade.
No.
But you just got to pull the boots on and
do we what learned you know. A lot from it too.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I'll just say one thing before we head off, is the commander was really good because we did a debrief.
Mm.
And the good thing about that, we all gave our points of, you know, what we want to actually put across and what we thought of it and all that sort of thing. They said their part, we said our part. And everybody had a say.
Mm.
Everybody took it on board.
Yeah.
And it was actually improved, I suppose, the way the police work in the future.
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, born out of that was the fact that four of us got sent on a detective training course later in that year.
Yep.
And that hurt the police station to lose those experience us as experienced members.
Yep.
For us to be
absent. Well, not me, mate. That was you.
Well, there was four of us who went. But the four of us who went were the junior guys in both criminal investigations
yep.
and domestic violence and the
yep.
the drug squad, for yep. want of a better word. So the four of us were deliberately sent away at the expense of the station to receive detective training.
Yep.
But I'll tell you what, I think we can talk, we will definitely talk more about criminal investigation.
And probably there's probably a little bit more about the case. I think we've covered off on most of it. Like we said, we don't want to go in too much detail because...
Well, we're not talking about that matter.
No, so that's right.
It's more just the
But I think there's a lot of lessons we learned from that one. But anyway, I think we'll just, yep. So we'll move on from here. What do you think we talk about next?
Well, it's funny that we've segued there because we talked about the leadership that came down from the top there. I think an excellent thing to talk about is leadership within the police force.
Yep, perfect.
So it's two ordinary coppers, or in our case, very ordinary coppers.
Exactly, and we're signing off.
We're signing off, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right.